Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Welcome back to Overnight America. This hour, I think we'll have an interesting discussion with a professor of law and also an author. We're going to talk about the Electoral College and saving it, why the national popular vote would undermine democracy. Our guest this hour is Robert Hardaway. Thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
I'm happy to join with you.
So we're going to go a full hour talking about the Electoral College. We have some election results still coming in some different states. There could be an opportunity to switch over the governorship in Kentucky. That's kind of an interesting watch. But last election, 2016, you saw there were some people yelling and screaming at the top of their lungs, well, Hillary Clinton should be the president of the United States because we should be going by the popular vote. You decided to dedicate a lot of thought and time into why that would be a bad idea for the United States to look solely on the popular vote and get rid of the Electoral College altogether. So I was hoping you can give me an overview of some of the things in your ideas of about that.
Well, one problem with the popular vote is that the votes are usually split. The popular vote system is the Russian system, where everyone just makes an application to be on the ballot. And the French adopted the Russian system in 2017. One candidate, the extreme right winger, got 21%. Macron got, I think, 23%. And the two major parties got 19% each. So there was a runoff. And when you have a runoff, it gives the illusion that there's going to be a majority support for whoever wins. Mm-hmm. But in fact, that's not the case. The two candidates who were in the playoffs were opposed by 65% of the people. As a matter of fact, there were so many outraged voters, over 600,000, who cast their ballots blank in protest, saying this is not democracy. So that's what happens when you don't have an electoral college. You get someone who's elected with a very small percentage of the vote. Mm-hmm. And that's one reason it really does undermine democracy. But it also, having the electoral college, one of the ideas behind it was that support has to be broad in a country, not just narrow in a particular region. For example, let's say in the South in the 1950s, you had 90% who supported a segregationist candidate. That candidate might be opposed by the rest of the country. But because there's huge support in a narrow region, they might actually win the popular vote. And under the Electoral College, you have to have broad support over good parts of the entire country.
I think there could be a huge problem with the way we look at voting in general in the country if we were to go to just a popular vote. So right now, states have individual rights, and there's different things that are important to individual states. Different people living in different states have different issues, different problems, things that are important to their region. You know, here in the Midwest, it's a lot different than over in the West Coast and some of the things that we want to see better for our region or whatnot. I think that you have this sort of idea that, you know, the government is able to, you know, be your, this is going to sound really strange. The government is your daddy, and they can just take care of everyone the exact same everywhere in the United States. And I think there's so many other people living in these regions that say, you know what, where I live in rural Missouri, you don't represent the same values that you have in a Los Angeles or a San Francisco. I don't want to be clumped in. That's why the Electoral College, I think, is so important, because it's able to give a voice You don't have to live in a giant metropolitan area. You don't. You can actually still have a voice living in these rural areas too. And I think that if it were to go away, so many people would feel disenfranchised because their vote essentially wouldn't matter at that point.
Well, that's absolutely correct. The person who last saved the Electoral College, because there's challenges to it every 10 years or so, usually by the losing candidate. For example, in 1960, Nixon, according to the Congressional Quarterly, won the popular vote. John F. Kennedy, though, won a pretty good margin in the electoral vote. And at that time, it was Republicans who were outraged and said, this isn't fair, this isn't legitimate. Nixon should have been elected president because he got the popular vote. But in 1956, before that election, it was John F. Kennedy who went into the Senate, who in the Senate gave his great speech. And he said, direct election, which is the Russian system, would greatly increase the likelihood of a minority president. And I just gave you an example of that, how in the 2017 French election, that's exactly what happened under the Russian popular vote system. It would break down the federal system under which the states entered the Union. Mm. That was the agreement. That's why we have one country instead of six or seven countries. Small states said, we're going to form our own little country because we're not going to be participating in a legislature where there's not equal suffrage in each state having equal representation. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the big states said we wanted based on population. And so the country was basically breaking apart. King George was kind of chortling that we would soon be asking to come back into the fold of Great Britain. And the country is breaking apart. And the grand compromise was we'll do both. We'll have equal suffrage in the Senate. Each state will have two representatives in the Senate. And then we'll have the House. And that's what the Electoral College is based on. The weight that each state gets in the Electoral College in the presidential system is based on two votes in the Senate, two representatives in the Senate, and at least one in the House. And you can only abrogate that weight if every state agrees. A lot of people don't know the last sentence of Article 5 of the Constitution, which says you can't take away that weight unless every state agrees.
Mm-hmm. Every state would have to
agree to abrogate the right that each state has of a weight that they get in the presidential election based on two electoral votes for every representative they have in the Senate. And every state has an equal representation in the Senate.
Yeah.
And so to abrogate that, and that's what the Electoral College is based on.
Yeah.
Which, that's the one provision in the Constitution that cannot be amended except unless every state agrees.
That's fascinating. Saving the Electoral College is the name of the book that is out now, Why the National Popular Vote Would Undermine Democracy. And professor of law and also author of the book, Robert Hardaway, joining us. I think maybe it would be smart to explain why the Electoral College is in place and why it operates the way it operates. And can we do that right after the break?
Absolutely.
Let's do that. This is Overnight America, KMOX.
St. Louis's weather station, KMOX.
He's a professor of law and author of a book that's out now, Saving the Electoral College, Why the National Popular Vote Would Undermine Democracy. And author Robert Hardaway joining us on Overnight America. Maybe it's a good idea to explain why the Electoral College was put into place as the standard here when it comes to voting in these national elections.
It was implemented in Article 2 of the Constitution as a way to bind the country together. Because at the time, right before the Constitutional Convention, the country was breaking apart. The smaller states, Delaware, Rhode Island, so forth, wanted to form their own country. Pennsylvania, New York had already set up tariffs and barriers. They were becoming almost a de facto separate country. And the South was also becoming a separate country. We would probably be like South America today with six or seven countries in North America if we had not had the Electoral College, because the small states said we don't want to be a part of a union in which each state does not get equal representation. And the large states said No, we want a Congress that's a legislature that's based on population alone. And so they left that to the very end of the convention because they knew that that was going to be the one thing that would prevent the country coming together as one nation. And then even George Washington said, I regret having participated in this. It was a foolish errand. We're never going to have one nation. We're breaking apart. And then at the last minute, somebody came up with this ingenious, it's called the Grand Compromise that brought the country together. And one of the things that binds the country together today. And the compromise was, we'll do both. We'll have equal representation in the Senate, and then we'll have based on population in the House. And so it was based on that the Electoral College was created, based on how many representatives the state has in the Senate, how many in the House. So if you're going to abolish the Electoral College, you really first have to abolish the U.S. Senate. And, of course, demagogic politicians have been proposing that because they say it's not one person, one vote, which is precisely true. And the small states said, if you're going to go by that formula, we're not going to join.
Wow. Who was the founding father that actually brought up that Grand Compromise?
Well, you know, we haven't been able to pinpoint. Some people think it was Benjamin Franklin. He was the oldest one there. And so he was the wiser one. And he came up with this compromise, and neither side really liked it, but they said, we like it enough that we will join together in one nation rather than five or six different nations. So demagogic politicians today realize this, and so they often propose, Ralph Nader did, for example, his party, the Green Party, proposed that we get rid of the U.S. Senate. Other politicians have said, well, if one person is going to equal one vote, we could still have a Senate, but California would get 51 senators and Wyoming would be lucky to get one senator.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thinking is what goes on when people say, let's adopt the Russian direct elections system. And the problem with that is you never get a majority president. You get somebody who's supported by maybe 10-20% of the population.
You know, geographically speaking, sure, in some of these different large areas, you find when you look at the electoral map at the end of an election and they break it down based on the different districts, some that vote Republican majority, some that vote Democrat majority, it seems to be a lot of red on the map. But you see those metropolitan areas like St. Louis being one of them, and, you know, the Los Angeleses, the New Yorks, the Detroits, the San Franciscos, the Seattles, Portlands, you know, some of these different areas that you would see. Those are the ones that always seem to be very blue. And I think that even though we're here in St. Louis in one of these blue areas, you know, if you live in an area anywhere else in the state of Missouri, you think to yourself, well, I don't want that. And I feel a lot of people recognize that sort of thing. But now we're almost reverse engineering it. You see some of the pushes in recent years where people want to put it on the ballot for California to leave the country, become its own country. You know, people want to reverse engineer this because they feel like, well, you know what? Maybe it's better that we have our own representation by ourselves. Maybe we become our own country. So people, it seems like, are willing to go through some pretty extreme lengths to get out of that system.
Well, that's why the Electoral College is what bound the country together into one nation. And it's really the glue that binds the country together today. You know, Madison, when he was asked, what have we done with this Electoral College? He said, what we have, this is John F. Kennedy quoting Madison in 1956 in the Senate. He says, this government is not completely consolidated, nor is it entirely federal. Who are the parties to it? The people. Not the people comprising one great mass, but the people comprising 13 sovereignties, of course, 50 today. Mm-hmm. So that was the concept of federal. That's the whole concept of federalism. And it's a system that has worked so well to bind the nation together. And those who want to abolish the Senate, upon which the Electoral College is based, really like the Russian system. They think just have some great mass. And, of course, if you do that, then I'd point out that Willie Sutton was the big bank robber. And they asked him, why did you rob banks? And he said, because that's where the money is. Well, if we had a Russian-style election, They would just campaign in the big cities. They go to where the millions of votes are, Los Angeles, Chicago, New York. And they wouldn't bother with Wyoming or any of the smaller states because they're such a small percentage of the population. But when they have those electoral votes, then that's worth going and campaigning there. The election in 2000 was decided by just three or four electoral votes.
Mm-hmm. We find, too, that the states that feel like they're ignored, the flyover states, you know, they do matter. And they do have people that live there that have their own interest. And regionally speaking, we do have different states that try to find ways to better the people that are inside of their state. And one of the interesting parts that we see this come up every once in a while, it's normally when there's a candidate like Donald Trump, for example, a lot of people don't like him. And they see Hillary Clinton get more votes that way, and then they say, this is so stupid. You know, we're so screwed up here in America that we can allow a system for Donald Trump to become president, even though Hillary Clinton got more votes. So it gets a lot of pundits involved, and it gets a lot of people going out there onto the television talking about how we need to get rid of this electoral system. Well, and you just laid out the entire history here, and you talked about why this is important. When you see these pundits come up on TV, what are the things you're yelling at your television when they start saying these things?
Well, they don't understand the system. They don't understand the history. And it was Republicans in 1960 who said there must be something wrong with an election who elected Kennedy in the Electoral College, even though Nixon, according to the Congressional Quarterly, got a majority of the popular votes. There must be something wrong with the system. And, of course, there's not anything wrong with the system. In 1974, for example, in Great Britain, Labour elected more members to Parliament, who in turn chose the leader, but they didn't get the so-called popular vote. But no one said that's not legitimate. If you want to make a football analogy or a sports analogy, sometimes when I watch a football game, I hear somebody saying, well, our team got the most yardage. And it's not legitimate that the other team won because they got more points. I mean, that's the kind of thinking that goes into these people who want to destroy the very foundations of our country.
I love that analogy. I love that a lot. We've had these debates, too, and it's a pretty divisive topic when we bring it up on the radio because, you know, once in a while someone says something and then we bring it up and people are able to call in and give their opinion and voice on this. And some people just don't understand it. I think that in general, people find this as something divisive when it really shouldn't. What's interesting to me is I didn't realize that all the states would have to vote to get rid of the electoral system in order to actually do that.
They would. And that's because the weight that each state is guaranteed under the Constitution, under Article 2, is that their weight is not based on the amount of population they have only partly. It's partly based on the number of representatives they have in the Senate. And then if you read the last sentence of Article 5 of the Constitution, it says you cannot take away that equal representation in the Senate, upon which the electoral, the weight each state gets in the Electoral College is based. You can't do it unless every state agrees. So the saving of the Electoral College is actually not a good title for the book. I didn't want it to be titled that because it sounds like it's in danger. And I don't think it's in danger because I don't think 50 states are going to agree to give their equal rights in the Senate. I don't see the Delaware or Wyoming saying, yes, it's okay. We'll give up our senators. Well, I just don't see it. It's pie in the sky, and so it's hopeless to talk about it. And once people realize this, John F. Kennedy pointed this out in Congress, that you can't do it unless every state agrees. And so then they tried to figure out, people tried to figure out, you got these millionaires out in California who are trying to figure out a way around the Constitution with this so-called MPVIC, the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. Hmm. And when I testified in Colorado back in 2007, the vote was 10-1 originally to adopt this. Wow. Under this system, you'd look at what other states do, and if they have popular votes, you go by the popular votes in other states, and you disregard the will of the people in your own state. Well, I pointed out to them that that can never work because there's no such thing as a popular vote. It's based on a misconception. Many people, when they go in the voting booth, think they're voting for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. No, they are not. They are voting for a guy named Joe Blow or Jane Doe, who says that if you elect me, I promise to go to the Electoral College and vote for so-and-so. Mm-hmm. Well, some states, like Alabama in 1960, is a good example, they have unpledged electors. So there's no, what do you do with popular votes for unpledged electors? How are you going to count that? In other words, there's no such thing as a popular vote.
Mm-hmm.
No such thing. People are misled. They watch TV on election night. At the bottom of the screen, it says so many popular votes for a candidate. No, there's no one votes for a candidate in this country.
The way that it breaks out. And it's funny because I was looking at that and I was going back. We have a political discussion on Mondays with our friend by the name of Rich Rubino. And we were talking about John Edwards for some reason. I looked and he even got a vote for presidency one year. So, yes, they can go rogue. And it's interesting, those states that talk about, well, we may actually go against what the tally was inside of our own state if we feel like we need to go towards what the popular vote of the United States is. So maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that. And I also wanted to bring up another point that you bring up in your book, Saving the Electoral College, which people can find on Amazon now, which, like, let's say there wasn't, let's say we got rid of the Electoral College. Let's just say hypothetically all the states got together and said, that's okay, let's do this sort of thing. How that could actually backfire for the people that want to see that happening. So do you mind holding on? We can talk a little bit more.
Absolutely.
Great. He is
all night if you need me.
All right. He is a professor of law, and we're talking about his book that just came out a few weeks back, Saving the Electoral College, Why the National Popular Vote Would Undermine Democracy. It's author Robert Hardaway. We'll continue with him on Overnight America KMOX.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
And welcome back to our show, Overnight America. And our special guest this hour is the author of a new book called Saving the Electoral College, Why the National Popular Vote Would Undermine Democracy. He's a professor of law, author Robert Hardaway. Thank you again for sticking around with us here tonight.
Happy to do it.
So what was
the
alternative?
Good.
I'm happy to get the word out. This is an important topic. We're getting close to the 2020 election, and we know that this topic will be up probably every 3 weeks. Someone's going to bring this topic up again. So what was the alternative title for your book? I'm just curious.
Well, my original book, I've written a number of books, was the Constitution and the Electoral College, the Electoral College and the Constitution. And then when I was, my publisher was asking me if I wanted to update it, they said, well, what new has happened since your book? And I said, well, the big thing that's happened is this national popular vote interstate compact scheme that's making the rounds under the radar in various state legislatures. And it first came to Colorado back in 2007. And Professor Riley and I went down to the legislature hearings. And I said, give us 15 minutes and we'll explain why that can't be done. And they said, fine. And so we gave our explanation, which is in my book, and they reversed from 10 to 1 in favor of it to 10 to 1 against. They said, oh, my goodness, we had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you talk about undermining democracy, under this MPBIC, they would propose to require Colorado, let's say Hillary won Colorado. If somewhere in the other states they voted for Trump, then Colorado would cast its votes for Trump rather than Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really outrageous. And it's based on the notion that there is a popular vote out there, but there is not. In some states, you have electors who are unpledged on the ballot, on the Democratic ballot or the Republican ballot. And the answer when I asked the COSA people, the people who are pushing this national popular vote interstate compact, I said, how would you count the votes that voters cast for unpledged electors?
Hmm.
And they said we would simply ignore them.
Ooh,
so
boy.
Disenfranchising millions of voters is their explanation for why the Russian direct election system would be good. And that's why I have that subtitle that it would undermine democracy. You can't disenfranchise that many millions of people and call it a democratic system.
You know, do you have a favorite founding father?
Well, I think Madison is probably the favorite. He recognized that we have a basically federal system. We don't have one giant mass, and we don't have voters that rep from the whole country. We have 13 sovereignties, And Madison made that very clear. He says, we have a federal republic, and who are the parties to it? The people. But not the people comprising one great mass, but the people comprising 13 sovereignties. Today, that would be 50 sovereignties.
You know, I wanted to ask you a few other things, and I'm glad that I have you on the line here, because when we talk about the Electoral College and the people that want to abolish it, and let's just say hypothetically they were able to get their wish, you talk about in your book how that perhaps would backfire on them. In fact, the desired result of what they really wanted, something different would happen. Can you explain that?
Well, let's take for example, in 1992, the polls show at that time that if the election had been held in May of 1992, Perot had 33% of the polling, Bush 28%, and Clinton 24%. Now, under the Russian so-called popular vote system, there would have been a runoff between Perot and Bush. One of them would have gotten over 50%. It's preordained when you have a runoff of only two people. And the Democratic Party would have been consigned to the dustbin of history because Clinton wouldn't have even been in the playoff. And that's the problem with these Russian-type systems, is that you get a number of candidates, and so the vote is split. The beauty of the Electoral College, it channels the voters, and it encourages compromise before the election, which makes it much different than the parliamentary democracies, for example, in Italy. It's 16 governments in 14 years or something like that, which is very unstable, not good for the economy. And that's what can happen if you don't have a real Electoral College.
You know, you wrote another book, and I wasn't planning to ask you about this, but I was looking at your Amazon and some of the different books that you have up on Amazon right now, and joining us is author Robert Hardaway. Can I ask you a question about another book you have?
Please.
Yeah. So you wrote a book, Airport Regulation, Law, and Public Policy. That one drew to my attention. Now, I don't know exactly what's in that book, so this question may not apply to what's in the book. But here in the city of St. Louis, we're going through a debate if we should privatize our airport. Right now, it's not private. But they want to think about perhaps selling and privatizing it. What do you think about a city like the city of St. Louis perhaps privatizing the airport?
Well, what is the real critical issue is the slots and the availability of slots where airplanes can land. And the problem is, if you have a government monopoly and you don't have a free market system, then a couple of airlines can monopolize the entire airport. And that really stifles competition, rates go up, and so forth. Most airports are quasi-private, quasi-public. They're not entirely one or the other. It's really, an airport might be owned by the government, but there will be private aspects to it. The airlines can come up with the money for a new runway or something. So I think that the system, it depends upon the particular jurisdiction you're in.
You know,
so that you've got a little further away from the Electoral College there.
Yeah, I know. Well, I just saw that and I thought, oh, that might be interesting here. But I got a lot more questions when it comes to the Electoral College. So let's say we're doing the whole Wizard of Oz and you pull the curtain back, you know, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain type of moment. Who do you think's really behind this push to try to get rid of the Electoral College?
Well, every 20 years or so, it's a different group of people. I mean, it was actually the issue first came up at the Constitutional Convention itself. There's a guy named Rufus King, I think, who was from Pennsylvania, who wanted a popular vote, what we would now call a Russian-style popular vote, because he figures his two states would rule the roost. And so this disagreement comes up every 20 years or so. In 1960, it was the Democrats who were out. The Republicans, who were outraged, wanted to, quote, abolish the Electoral College because it elected a Kennedy instead of Nixon. They didn't like that. Mm-hmm. And that's as far as most people's analysis goes. If it didn't elect my candidate, there must be something wrong with the whole system. And yet, we've been very spoiled. We expect to go to the watch TV on the election night and then find out who is the president the next day, and then we can go around and do our business. In fact, if we had a Russian system, let's say we had had one in 1960, we still wouldn't know who the president was. The vote was so close that you'd have to have recounts in every state. But you can't have recounts in every state because every state has their own threshold for a recount. So if you had a recount, you'd have to recount in, I don't know, 114,000 different voting establishments, 50 different states. If you think that the 2000 election was traumatic because you had a recount in one state, can you imagine trying to have a recount in 50 states and going through the trauma of appeals and so forth in 50 states? That would take possibly years. We would to this day not know who was elected president in 1960 if we had adopted the Russian system.
Oh, wow.
And the drafters of the Constitution knew this, and they anticipated it, and let every state decide how they want to allocate their electoral votes.
Yeah, the appeal process alone, the hanging chads, all of those same problems over and over again. Oh, that's one of those side effects.
Under the Russian system, people who want to abolish the Electoral College, they think if it's a close election, then we'll have those kind of appeals in all 50 states going on simultaneously. I mean, it's such a nightmare that it's almost freakish to even think about it.
And sometimes you hear those stories about how some of the ballots that were filled out were being held unless it was close, you know? And you hear about these instances sometimes when it comes to people that were overseas, some of our soldiers not getting back in time. You find about some of the times that they do these provisional ballots, and they're just like, they're put in holding just in case they're needed. If it's a blowout, they don't even bother. If it's, you know, close, they'll take a look at these things. There's so many other circumstances that are involved with something like that that would completely turn that system crazy.
Absolutely. I have written a different book called Crisis at the Polls, also ABC Clio Publishers, in which the one that's most conducive to fraud is the absentee ballot. It used to be that if you wanted to cast an absentee ballot, you needed to get a doctor's excuse. If you're a military, you would get an excuse from your commanding officer. If you're a railroad worker, you could also get an excuse. Now, the idea is, what's more important than legitimacy, according to people who like the absentee ballot? Convenience.
Yes.
We don't want to have to go to the polling place and wait in line. We don't want to do that. We want convenience. And, you know, these absentee ballots, well, even here in Colorado, there was a postal truck with I don't know how many thousands of absentee ballots that sat on this postal truck while the election was taking place, that somehow there was a miscommunication. Mm-hmm. People go into old age homes, and they bring in a bunch of absentee ballots, and everybody is supposed to sign on the dotted line, and then they go and put it in the big box of absentee ballots. So that's one of the biggest reasons for inducements to fraud in the country is this absentee ballots, saying that legitimacy is not so important. What's really important is convenience.
I will admit, my very first presidential election, I voted with an absentee ballot. I was going to college, and it wasn't practical for me to drive back 3 hours to vote and 3 hours back. So I filled out an absentee ballot because of that, because my home address was still with my parents' home, even though I was away at college.
And that's fine to have exceptions, doctor's excuse if you are incapacitated. If you are living away from your state, then you would also have a reason. But to just say to everybody, just write an absentee ballot. They usually end up in these bins somewhere where they can be produced at the right time.
Yeah. Do you mind holding on for one more break? We'll come back and finish the hour.
First, yes, of course.
Let's do that. Saving the Electoral College is the name of the book, which you can find on Amazon, Why the National Popular Vote Would Undermine Democracy. And the author, guest Robert Hardaway, will continue with him on Overnight America KMOX.
This is Overnight America, sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. Michaelsflooringoutlet.com on KMOX.
Welcome back, and one last time with the author of the book that just came out called Saving the Electoral College, Why the National Popular Vote Would Undermine Democracy. He's a law professor. Robert Hardaway, thank you again for sticking with us all hour on KMOX.
I'm happy to do so. One comment I would like to get in is to talk about the Electoral College as an institution. You know, we think that it's sort of unique to the United States, but it really isn't. Every parliamentary democracy has their version of Electoral College. For example, in England, in the Parliament, you elect members to Parliament, and they in turn vote for their leader. But the drafters of the Constitution wanted something similar, but they didn't want the presidency to be beholden to the legislature. because the drafters of the Constitution were very concerned about a balance of power and things that would make it so that one party or one institution in the government would not have overwhelming power over the other. And so they formed the electoral the legislature to the task of passing legislation. But they formed the Electoral College for only one purpose, to elect the president. And that's so the parliament in England is very much like our Electoral College. The difference is that because they don't have our particular type of Electoral College, which is limited to choosing the president, they get three parties sometimes, and no one gets a majority, and they have to form an unstable coalition so that a very small party may be the difference between forming a government or not. And so they have unbelievable power. A very small extremist group might have an inordinate amount of power. So we don't have that in the United States. The compromises take place not trying to form a coalition, unstable coalition after the election, but before the election. For example, in 1936, the polls showed that the socialists were polling at about 10 or 11%. But the socialists soon realized that under the Electoral College, you don't get a single electoral vote unless you get a plurality of votes in a particular state. And so they compromised with the Democratic Party before the election. And their polling and the votes for the Socialist Party on Election Day was something like 1 or 2% because they compromised ahead of time. And so that's one of the beauties of the Electoral College and why we don't have these unstable type of governments like you see, for example, in Italy and even in England. They have these very fragile coalitions, which creates a lot of instability.
You know, we only got a couple of minutes, and I know you do a lot of different research, and this is just more of a generally speaking. Anytime I read a book about the founding fathers and all of the different wonderful things that went in, it's amazing to me the wisdom that they had in order to put certain systems into place that have stood the test of time through these years. I really admire that. Do you find that when you're doing this research, you also have that same admiration?
I do, and we were very lucky. The founding fathers were so astute. They realized the Electoral College was the only thing that could actually bring us all together into one nation instead of five or six or seven, as in South America. They didn't come up with this solution. They didn't have founding fathers, and so the countries broke apart because you didn't have this glue that got the country together. This grand compromise. Under which each state would be given equal representation in the Senate, and then those small states' representation and weight in the presidential elections would be based on that representation in the Senate. And that's why they were so concerned that this exact kind of activity by demagogic politicians would occur. They knew in the future there would be some demagogue who would say, let's, on the mantra of one person, one vote, let's get rid of the Senate. We'll have a constitutional amendment. And then the Electoral College will fall as well. And that's why they said, that's the only provision in the Constitution which cannot be changed. The last sentence of Article 5 says every state has to agree to give up their representation in the Senate upon which every state's weight in the presidential election is based. They foresaw this very activity. They foresaw these attempts to undermine our democratic institutions.
You know, if people wanted to find you online in some of the work that you're doing or find this book, where can they look it up?
Well, you get the book. I've written a number of books on the Electoral College, three or four. Also, there's a website called Save Our States, the notion that we can abolish the state boundaries and just have one big giant mass. It's still out there. That notion is still out there. So we're the website Save Our States is a place where people can indicate that they think that would be a terrible idea. The Russian system is simply not a democratic system.
No, I love this topic, and I'm glad that you could stay an entire hour to talk about it. It's so important, and you know what I'll find myself doing is pointing back to this interview in the future because I know this topic will be coming up. So I'll be sending lots of links out in the next year whenever this topic becomes popular again, to make sure people can listen back and why it's important to save the Electoral College with your book, Saving the Electoral College, Why the National Popular Vote Would Undermine Democracy. Robert Hardaway, thank you so much for coming on to Overnight America and KMOX.
I appreciate the opportunity to get the word out. Thank you.
Thank you. And he joins us on the Quiver River Electric KMOX guest line. We have another hour of Overnight America still to get to. And we'll keep the phone lines open for you if you want to call in during this last hour. It's 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Again, one more time. Check it out on Amazon. Saving the Electoral College. Robert Hardaway is the name of the author. Go look it up now.
Your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.